Alright, welcome back. Guys, I wanted to ask you, since you guys are both sort of, what's the right word? Creative people?
I thought you were looking for genius.
Sure. Well, that's also why I'm asking you, because, I am dumb. Please help me to understand this. So I was thinking recently about like I get this urge to every once in a while when I'm like editing a podcast to just edit in like the sound of like a car crash. Or like a plane exploding, like from like with inside the plane. Or like maybe the sound of like a treadmill exploding. So that the people who are listening to this, I'm assuming that they're listening like while all these things are happening, you know, it would like totally freak them out for a second.
Right.
And but then I thought that that would only be funny to me. Probably be really annoying to all the people who are, not running on a treadmill or flying in a plane or driving in a car. And the other thing I thought of was like, I know a lot of people do like chores or dishes while listening, because chores is not, dishes is not chores. Basically doing chores while listening to the podcast. So like maybe the sound of like a hand going into a garbage disposal. Or like a vacuum cleaner exploding. Really just anything exploding. But so getting back to my question. Do you guys ever have like this weird urge to like, you're creating something, let's say you're writing something or maybe painting something. Do you ever have the urge to just drop in something that's completely like subverts the expectations of the person that you're doing this for? Just like for your own amusement?
Well, I don't know that I ever would do it just for my own amusement. Sometimes I would do it just like for a stylistic point. Like it would still work with whatever I was writing, for example. I don't think that's exactly what you're talking about, though.
Yeah, I think I'm talking about the kind of what was that movie? What was the okay? The movie was called Man on the Moon with Jim Carrey, and
Andy
it was
Kaufman.
about Andy Kaufman. Yeah,
Right.
I feel like that was like kind of his whole MO, where he did a lot of stuff that like only amused himself, but then like years later, people thought he was like comic. A comic genius for it.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I do with my writing.
You hope that somebody will like notice like a small part and like right now, if they were to just read it like in the moment in today's context, they would read it and just think like this is garbage, or like why are you putting me through this?
Yeah.
But in 30 years, you hope that they just find it hilarious.
Yeah, what the phrase I want to describe me is he was before his time, or he was ahead of his time.
Right.
So, which is probably why I don't have anything published. So.
You think it's because of all those like weird like a weird sexual innuendo that you threw in on like page 7?
Yeah. But no, yeah, I kind of that's I've probably been doing that a little bit more recently with kind of especially like, well, I had to take a workshop this last semester because I switched to over to the fiction program, and you're supposed to have four workshops in your genre. And even though I'd taken like I took a nonfiction class, which is also prose, and I had two poetry workshops. Like, I had plenty of workshops, but I only had three fiction workshops. So I'm taking one in my last semester, which is not something people usually do. So I didn't really take it necessarily all that seriously. So I did, I mean, for my last workshop, I revised the story, and basically I took out, like, all the dialogue and just basically described everything that was happening, which one of the big things in fiction they always tell you is, like, show, don't tell, which means don't just summarize everything. You should put it in scene where, you know, people can be engaged with it. Right. So I just put it, I just summarized everything and told you what everybody was thinking and why they were wrong. and it was just because I thought that would be entertaining, so.
that kind of makes me think of something along the same kind of lines, right? Like, where that's something that you mentioned, like, show, don't tell, it's kind of frowned upon to just give summaries of everything, right? But, like, there are other things that you're not supposed to do, like plagiarize other people's works, right? but what if you plagiarized for some sort of artistic purpose, but without, like, calling attention to it, like, within the creative work?
Well, you can do that. You can just put an index at the back, or just put, like, a note in the back.
Yeah, but what if you don't put a note? Like, what if you're the whole purpose of this thing is to get people to think that you plagiarize and wonder if you did it on purpose or not?
I don't know.
I would do that. Well, that was it. Reality Hunger.
Yeah, David Shields.
Yeah, he has a book about sort of fiction and nonfiction, and he would argue he wanted to not have the appendix at the end of his book that said, you know, these were all these sources came from. So, like, on the first page of the book, it's like, you should rip out the appendix because I don't think it should be there, but my publisher made me put it in there.
Yeah. And then there's a note when you get to it that says, like, you should take out your scissors and cut out these pages or something.
Yeah. his argument basically was that, like, everything we do is built on the works of others. And so it's a little false to suggest that if you don't include all your sources, that somehow you came up with everything on your own. So that's part of his argument. He has a lot of different arguments, actually, but.
Right. I mean, I suppose there's, like, a legal requirement for you to, you know, source your work. In that, you know, there's publishing rights, like, where you can't, like, reproduce a certain amount of somebody else's work without giving attribution, right? But then there's also this sort of more, I don't want to say, like, I don't know, maybe academic is the right word, but the academic reason or the academic push for you to sort of show what work is others and show what work is yours. I guess by the part that isn't annotated as somebody else's work.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like, I think T.S. Eliot said that immature poets borrow and mature poets steal. it's just, I mean, like, that's where good work comes from, is from taking other things that other people have done and refiguring them, you know, however you want. But we do have pretty, maybe not strict, but strict copyright laws now that, like, it used to be, I think copyright laws were, like, for 12 years. So, like, you know, after 12 years, basically works became public property, essentially.
Right.
But we keep extending them, you know, I think they're up to like 90 years or something like that on some stuff now.
Yeah.
Right. It's because of Disney, right? That's the whole thing. Every time something that Disney worked on comes up for to be expired, they push Congress to extend it.
Yeah. And it's to the point, it's like, well, I'm getting a lot of this from a book I read about creativity, but, basically, like, it's good because, you know, protects authors' works, and so it's worth it for you to try to produce something and to be able to copyright it and make money or whatever. But it stifles creativity if you feel like you're going to get in trouble every time you, if you fear that you're stealing something from someone else, you know?
Right.
Right.
And it's not just with writing, but with other, like, you know, inventions and stuff like that.
Especially right, with, yeah, with, like, patents.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Patents and with patent trolls.
Yeah.
Copyright ogres and...
Is that what they call them?
No, I didn't set that up. But that's trademarked, actually, so...
Oh, okay, so we can't ever use that. Okay.
Yeah, you can use that.
Well, you know, the trademark is the thing that you have to protect, right?
Yeah.
You have to, like, sue somebody to protect your trademark. I was going to ask something, but now I can't remember what it was. Talk amongst yourselves while I think about this. Sorry. You know, like, the one way to get around copyright infringement is if you claim that it's parody.
Right, yeah.
Well, maybe that's not the one way, but that's, like, a primary way that people have done it in the past. But
yeah.
could you insert a big chunk of somebody else's work into the middle of your work and claim that it's parody? I guess it probably depends on what your work is.
Yeah, I don't know if you could just word for word take what they wrote.
Right, because parody implies sort of modification of the original material. But what if by supplying it with a different context, you make it parodical?
Paradoxical.
that's what I was about to say.
Maybe if you took somebody's dialogue, but you put it in a completely different scene or something, then it would make it really funny or
right.
would just give it a different feel.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to your defense of it, I think, probably. Like, if you can make a case for it, then you could probably get away with it.
Sure.
But I don't know when you know, like, you know, I don't know if you can know from before you've written it whether or not you can get away with it. I guess that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
There's, I feel like if you create art out of somebody else's copyrighted material, I feel like you have a better chance of getting away with it. There was a court case a few years ago, maybe like 10 years ago, when DVD encryption was cracked. There was like a specific, I don't know if you guys are familiar with encryption at all, but basically it's like a long string of characters that forms a key that is used to decrypt the contents of what's on the DVD disc.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a master key that can unencrypt like any DVD or any content that's encrypted on a DVD.
Huh.
And somebody basically reverse engineered this encryption key and published it, like published the key. And the creators, like the maintainers of the DVD standard, claimed that it was copyright infringement or maybe it was breaking some patent or something. Because the key or the source code or whatever was copyrightable. But then because of the court case, the key became sort of public knowledge because in the documents of the court case was listed the key. Basically, they weren't able to, what's the word when they, like, anonymize things? I can't remember the word. But anyway, somebody then took the key and converted it to a haiku, like a really long haiku. Or, like, haiku triplets or whatever that's called. And copyrighted the haiku. Because it was, well, I don't know if they copyrighted the haiku, but basically they were able to get around the copyright infringement because it was a work of art or something like that.
Huh.
That's anyway.
Strange.
So if you want to publish anything that's copyrighted, I think all you have to do is write it in haiku form.
Well, that's why we've been doing this contest.
Yeah. if you have an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters, you'll get an infinite number of copyrighted material in haiku form. I think that's the logical extension of that phrase.
Yeah. Remember, I can't remember the names now, but basically this, I want to say this, I'm going to get these mixed up, I think, but it was like a photographer who took pictures of these works of art and then published them in their photography book. But like didn't do anything to them.
took a really, really good, clear picture of somebody's painting.
Yeah. And they were making an argument that they were creating art from this other art. And, I think that doesn't sound right anymore. I'll have to look that up and get back to you. But basically the idea was similar to that, like someone just copying someone else's, artwork and then, you know, claiming that it was their artistic.
Right. Creation. That's kind of the definition of like a slippery slope, right? If you let somebody take just a photograph of something that is artistic and then call that like a unique work, then theoretically, anytime I like photocopy my professor's syllabus,
right,
that's copyrighted on the bottom, I can say that I'm making an artistic work out of his original.
Yeah. Yeah. With like, sampling music, like a lot of times people don't get away with what they're wanting to do with creating new music out of old music or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Vanilla Ice, that's what I'm
saying. You're saying that Vanilla Ice, when he sampled that David Bowie song for his song, he didn't get away with it. What?
It was Queen, wasn't it?
Queen and David Bowie, I think.
Both. Yeah, oh.
It was Under Pressure. You know what?
Oh,
we have this. We have this incredible audio setup. I'm just going to play samples from both of these, and then we're going to get sued for copyright infringement. Give me a second.
We just need to make a parody of it, and then we'll be okay.
Okay, this is Under Pressure, and this song came before Vanilla Ice's song. That pretty much sounds exactly like Vanilla Ice's song, right? Okay, now let me play Ice Ice Baby. This album is called Vanilla Ice is Back! ! And then hyphen after that, Hip Hop Classics.
What?
Released in 2008. Okay, here we go. Yo, VIP! I actually don't know if this is actually his song or a cover.
Ice, ice, baby. All right, stop, collaborate, and listen. Ice is back with a brand new invention, something.
Yes.
Well, the way I've heard him defend it is the original goes, dun 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 dun, and his goes, dun 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
I believe I have seen that VH1 special. Because I can clearly picture him saying that.
So, it's totally different.
You can see where he's coming from. So You Think You Can Dance, which we watch. Recently, they had these two guys who dance like hip hop together, and apparently they tried out last season, and then apparently a bunch of people were really angry with them because they stole this dance from these other guys on YouTube, and they got like all this hate mail and stuff like that, and so then they were like, no, it was like a tribute, you know, we were doing a tribute to these other guys, and then. They were like, you didn't show that part of the interview. And so then they like rolled the clip from the left, the previous season, and they're like, we really like these guys and we're going to do a tribute to them. And so because they didn't show that on the show, like they got all this hate mail and people told them that, you know, they shouldn't be dancing and all this other stuff.
They even right. like were like, you should die.
Like, yeah. Stuff like that.
Really harsh stuff.
I think that's similar to what happened on American Idol a couple seasons ago when, oh, who was the guy who was able to, like, yell really loud?
Oh, I remember.
Adam somebody.
Yeah. Adam Lambert?
Yeah. He did a couple of, he's basically sang a couple of, like, cover versions of some songs. Mm-hmm. And right. I don't think he necessarily ever claimed that they were, like, his originals, but I don't think he ever came out and said it until, like, when it was time for the elimination show. That, and then I think, like, going forward from that point, he would basically say, yeah, I found this on the internet or whatever.
Yeah, I remember that. And people just get touchy when they think you're trying to take credit for, like, an arrangement that's not yours or...
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And sometimes it's like, I never claimed it was mine, and just because you didn't know that someone else had done this arrangement, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
Changing subjects a little bit, Melanie and Josh, I guess, since you were also part of that episode. Do you guys remember the music episode that we did for the Versus segment?
I remember that
yes.
happening.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you remember when we decided between dub and dubstep and between Korn and Limp Bizkit?
Yeah.
Apparently, Korn is doing dubstep now.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
yeah, let me see if I can just play you one of these Korn songs. We'll do a proper version 2 of our musical versus segment at some point. But for now, just so that I don't forget about it. Okay, this is called... Well, okay, I have... actually see two different songs. One of them is called Evolution, E-V-I-L, Yushin, by Jonathan Davis and a couple of dubstep artists. But there's also one called Narcissistic Cannibal that features Skrillex and somebody else called Kill the Noise. So that's the one I'm going to play.
Okay.
Okay, that's probably enough of that.
I could see that playing in a Transformers movie.
I feel like this is pretty much the only logical evolution that, or evolution, excuse me, that Korn could possibly take is is into dubstep, like a mix between dubstep and whatever they were doing before.
Uh-huh.
Like rap rock or whatever that was called.
Right.
It's funny because I had a friend in high school who was a really good guitar player, and he played like a lot of metal and stuff like that, and he was really into Korn when they came out. And then a few years after, he was in Austin, and he was in a band, and I listened to their music, and it was a lot like that. It was a lot of electronic and sort of turntable type stuff. I was like, that's kind of weird that you... change so much, but it also it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I feel like well, I don't feel like an expert on the subject, but the trajectory of music that Korn has taken over the years has gone from kind of this like mix of like rock music and bagpipes to like to like a more like industrial rock sound to like rock slash rap. And then along the entire way, Jonathan Davis has basically been making dubstep noises with his mouth.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it's only natural that the music sort of follows suit. Okay, that was kind of a departure from what we were originally talking about. although, if you think about it, this is kind of a collaboration, which is similar to what we were talking about, with sort of remixing people's works. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to mention on the subject of anything that we talked about?
I would like to encourage you to put vacuum blowing out noises into the podcast at random points.
I'll have to see if I can find one. That was the thing, like I was going to put, or see if I could find the noise of, like maybe somebody, like a treadmill, like getting out of control and then somebody like falling off of it. But then I was like, in order to do this, I would like have to go to the gym.
Record.
And like rig up some treadmill to fail. And then, yeah, stand right next to the person on it with, like, a microphone. They would probably see through that.
Yeah, you might, the problems you might run into wouldn't be copyright problems in that case.
Right. Right, yeah.
It's not video, it's only audio.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a difficult thing to do. I think that they're are like videos of people doing this, like on YouTube, or like commercials where people have been like basically trying to jump onto a treadmill that's moving as fast as possible and yeah. then start running and then like falling yeah. and slamming into a wall or whatever.
Right.
But what I want to get is like that sound, you know, like when your feet are sort of hitting the ground, get that sound for about 10 seconds and then have the sound of maybe the treadmill blowing up or whatever.
There's a Mythbusters clip where Adam, I think it was, they were testing ways to sober up quickly
and just
to do exercise. And so he was running on the treadmill while drunk and he ended up wiping out, so that might give you the sound.
Yeah.
Then you will run into the copyright issue.
Right, yeah. Okay, that's probably going to do it for the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to, you know, write in, you can write in about anything. The email address is shamechronicles@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail. The number is 914-40-SHAME. And we have a website. There's going to be a new version of the website rolling out, probably before you download this episode. That's at shamechronicles.com. You can find all of our contact information there. You can browse previous episodes if you haven't listened to them all. I'm going to make a recommendation that you don't go back and listen to like the first 5 episodes. I think we were still kind of, like, coming into our own at that point.
Right.
The first one, I think the first one was probably pretty good. And, like, one of the segments in the second one was pretty good. But at that time, I don't think I was doing a very good job of sort of keeping us on track and keeping things interesting. So, which I'm really not doing a good job of right now either. But anyway, if you like the show, you can also... rate us on iTunes or leave a review. Right now, we only have one review from, I believe, Josh.
Yeah,
it was before he joined, though.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, and it's technically not his regular handle because I think he misspelled it. I think it's under like Whitland Prof or something like that.
Yeah, that's my street name.
So anyway, you can you know, leave us a review or whatever on iTunes. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.